to the 4Jack Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Season 5 of the 4Jack Podcast, powered by our friends over at Galvin Green. Galvin Green is the number one technical golf apparel brand preferred on every professional tour. They are famous for designing high-tech, elevated golf apparel for every golfer, male or female, to feel invincible under all conditions. Head over to galvingreen.com and get dialed in for the 2023 season. A massive thank you to our community that continues to support and share in our success. Throughout Season 5, you can expect more untold stories, more amazing guests, and a deeper dive into how golf truly impacts, connects, and is celebrated by many. This is going to be a fun episode tonight. I'm really excited to get to know this guy. But before we get into it with tonight's special guests, we're going to head down to warmer climates and check in with the AGM, Mr. D. Lane. What's happening in SoCal today?
Good day today. You know me, I've been lucky. People love to give me shit that I've got a lot of good friends and I know a lot of people and I always talk about all these people. But I have a very distinct foursome, and the first one of the foursome we had on was the hard to explain sometimes, Dontrell Willis. And then now we're going to go with the second part of this with our guest tonight. And then in a couple of weeks, we get the last and final piece now that he's back from the Super Bowl. So for me, this is the gentleman of all gentlemen. So I love Sween with all my heart. Just solid, really good at one thing in this world, and that's being the kindest human being I've ever met. And that's saying something, and I mean that with all sincerity. So I'm excited for tonight. I was happy we finally got him. He's just back in from Hawaii, and he had family playing a little beach volleyball in Hawaii. He's got one stepdaughter in UCLA, one at Arizona State, and then he's got a son that's going to be a rock star just like him. So it's fun to watch. He's great on social media, but more importantly, when we start getting into some of these things and we start talking about it, it's a really cool thing for me, because there's another guy that I love that's a little bit like that, and his name's Kirk McCaskill. But we've got this real Northeast kind of thing. One skated and one played football, but they have this common denominator in baseball. So we'll kind of get into all these things that he does. But excited to have him down here, and it's going to be a really good pod.
Yeah, lots of athletic ability in this family. So cool, and very excited to get into it with this guy. So without further ado, the 4Jack Podcast is extremely excited to have former Major League Baseball superstar on tonight, mega golf guy, and you can find him on Fox Sports Major League Baseball. Derek, like he said, tells us he's one of the good ones, and we'll know for sure after this episode. So welcome to the show, Mr. Mark Sweeney.
How you doing, guys? Hey, D. Lane, thank you very much for that intro. Man, I feel like I got to step it up a notch, Chris. I mean, this is heavy shoes to fill. I'm going after Dontrell Willis.
I was going for the Kleenexes. It was getting a little emotional there, though. Lots of love.
If you cry, you can build them up eventually. So that's what we'll try to do on this pod.
That's right. You know what? And it's the truth, though. Like, you know that there are just certain people you click with, and you got this thing, right? And it's like, we all have it. And you've probably got one of the most exciting years of your life coming up in the professional side of it when you're not playing with the Padres, as it seems like you guys have spent about $3 billion in salaries, and you just signed Machado, and now you're back in. I mean, we're talking kind of, this is some Yankee stuff. Like, obviously, I live, breathe and die in LA. I'm not the biggest Dodgers fan, but I'm a huge Petros and Money fan through osmosis. I know a lot about the Dodgers because I listen to the Dodger station every day. But obviously, with our friendship with Train, who does work for the Dodgers and then covers up here, it's kind of become this neat little thing. So let's just get right into it. Not golf first. We'll get into golf a little later and Lacoste and the early dew sweeping. But let's talk about what your excitement's got to be, knowing that with Bally and what you're going to be doing this year and all of the things you're going to be leading into, you guys are probably leading into the favorites to win the World Series in baseball.
Yeah, it's exciting, Derek. I mean, because we know what the Dodgers have done, especially the last decade. They've dominated the West, and it's almost assuming they are not only going to go to the playoffs, they're going to dominate in the playoffs. And eventually they won that World Series in the COVID year. But now the Padres, backed by an owner, Peter Seidler, who has really opened up his checkbook and said, you know what, we have to go out there and get some talented guys. It's exciting. They have a lineup to compare. And I say that with all due respect, because I respect Dave Roberts and the Dodgers. They have a lineup to compare with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And this year, after what they did and beat the Dodgers last year in the playoffs, I think that excitement is there because they learn so much. And we know in sports, when you have experience, I think you just get to take a big, fresh breath of air and understand, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to give it my best shot. There is nothing guaranteed in baseball. I don't care how much talent you have. There's always going to be a surprise team. There's going to be a team that you expect, like the Dodgers. And then there's going to be teams that, you know what, if they take the next step, this could be a dangerous team, not only in the World Series, but playing against the American League and being successful at that.
That bullpen has to look pretty damn good this year. I mean, you must be just absolutely pumped for this season to kick off.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. I mean, you need a closer, and they have him. They went out and got Josh Hader. There's so much talent to be able to do. Robert Suarez was a guy last year that we were wondering at this point of the year, what was going to happen. Was he good enough? Was he just an arm? He has built himself into a really good eighth inning guy. So then if you have those two guys, you can stack up the seventh inning, maybe even the sixth inning, and have some of the matchups. But when you're a team that's expected to not only make the playoffs, but go deeper in the playoffs, I think you have to have that close down and have the ability to get those last three outs. As we know, baseball is a very long regular season, but when that playoffs hit, man, it is intense, and the Padres and the fans of San Diego are very excited, and they're backing this team because I think there's anticipation where, like I said, they have an opportunity in front of them.
Well, I have my group of friends. I'm the only one that doesn't live in San Diego, and as you know, Sweens, it was really tough to leave the city. I mean, I got an amazing opportunity up here, and it was one that I wasn't going to pass up, especially because now as I'm working way to the top of the club, they're letting me do different things. But that being said, I have a group of friends, and obviously we understand San Diego better than most. You live there. I've spent a lot of my time there. I went to school there. And one of the things I'm probably the most excited about is I just think that the city deserves it. And this is coming from it. I'm obviously a Twins fan. I'm a Kirby Puckett kid growing up, but growing up in LA and in this part where I've been here for a while now, and I've kind of understood what the Dodgers mean. And I understand the Latino fan base, and it's just a different world. Chavez Ravine is unlike anything I've ever been to. It's a little bit like Wrigley, a little bit like Fenway. Like, it's just its own little entity, right? It is the most special thing in the city. And with all respect to the Lakers, the Dodgers are the Los Angeles town. But that being said, I just think more than anything, I think there's a lot of people in the world, even some people who have San Diego connections in LA, that want to see those fans in an amazing place like Petco. There is no NFL team anymore. It is literally their town. It's their town to win and lose. And I think that's been surprising is the game has captured every single genre or group of people in San Diego. It doesn't matter what your age, your son or somebody who's watched them for 30 years. Like, there's this whole range of people that are all Padres fans. And I think it's really become something fun. So I can't fathom. Can you talk a little bit about the heartbeat of the city, about when you hear things going out? Because obviously you're going to hear it all more than anybody going around. But you're surrounded by these guys. You're obviously close with Doc, and you've got guys like Bud and other teams. You've got all these guys that are your friends. But like, this has to be a special thing for you watching the city kind of just, it's just kind of percolating, right? You can see it rising. You can see it happening.
Yeah. D, I'll tell you this. First and foremost, I'm a baseball fan. I mean, I was a utility guy, so I played in seven different organizations. And as you mentioned, I'm fortunate enough to be able to broadcast. And most of my job is covering these Padres. I mentioned this because the last time this team went to the World Series, I was on that team. I made the last out of the World Series. We didn't finish the job. Even though you're in a San Diego town back then that had the Chargers and the Padres, but we still didn't finish the job. We lost to the Yankees in four games. And reason why I say that, this fan base is starving for a victory. They're starving for that next championship. They're going ballistic for this team because they believe in them, because it's been so long. Those stories in baseball make it, and your point is so valid. The kids in this city, the people that are wearing hats around proudly, have an anticipation that this is a team that's, they love to carry on. They love to talk about them around town, and it doesn't take them to have 80, 90 wins and they're in September. It is right now before the season's even started. So the starving nature of this fan base is exactly what you pointed out. They're the only team in town. You go out there and you win it and you have a parade around San Diego. It changes the whole dynamic, not only in San Diego, but it changes the way baseball is perceived sometimes. I think the only thing drawback that you see in baseball is that you have dominating teams. You talk about the Yankees, you talk about the Dodgers, you talk about the Red Sox a few years, and then there's just surprise teams. The Padres aren't going to surprise anyone, but man, I think it would be a huge surprise for them to win a World Series, and it would change everyone's life around here, including 11-year-old that I get to raise. He can't wait to watch this team because now he's proud of it. He's proud to wear a jersey. And I think the little leaguers, all the way up to the people that have been Padre fans for years, are starving for that feel of an opportunity for a championship.
Yeah, you know, and if my group, I've got a group of 10 of us, and we play a lot of golf, and they're all San Diego baseball. Four of them are season ticket holders. Two of them had dads that were, like, they're true Padres. It's not this thing where it's kind of like in vogue, hey, I'm going to go to Seaside and grab a salad, and then I'm going to go kind of in the fourth inning. And for those that don't know, Seaside's a market in California, or in San Diego, and it's they've got a place inside Petco, which is one of my favorite places in the world. It's a great place for a beer. It's an unbelievable place to watch, but you get these people and they're truly interested. And one of the things that I love the most about all of this is not only are you passionate because you played, but you're also an accomplished broadcaster. You obviously are on pre, you're doing a lot of things. Sometimes you're up here doing it in LA at the Fox studios. And so you get to see everything, right? Like you understand what these guys are going through. And so let's, before we kind of transition back to golf a little bit, let's talk about the pressure on this team, because for the first time I'm noticing the Dodgers aren't the hunted. And I know they are because they're going to win, right? Like when you win as many as they have, they still have to be beat. And, you know, they had a large disparity between wins in the season and the Padres. They won the series. That's what mattered. But it's almost like you can feel in Southern California, this kind of switch of what's happening. And it's kind of different because, you know, now, especially with Lux being out, it's a little different. LA is kind of thinking, well, are they an Ohtani watch? Are we just going to kind of try and retool for a year? And people don't realize how good the Dodgers farm system is, but you understand the Padres are going to be the hunted this year. And it's going to be pretty cool thinking where their lineup's going to be going and, you know, where they can hit Tatis and where they can do some of these things. Like, I'm really excited to see how that town and how that team handles that, because they play with such an unbelievable passion. It's not business IBM like, right? Like with the Dodgers,
right.
It's just like, holy shit, we haven't done this before. Let's just go and go and go and go.
Yeah, I mean, you make some great points. I'll say this. I think it's been a detriment to the Dodgers because they've been so dominant in the regular season. As a baseball fan, you watch how it evolves, and you watch Freddie Freeman, you watch Mookie Betts, Justin Turner last year, and the way they play Clayton Kershaw. I could go name after name. And they dominate because they are a machine because they're so good. They understand how to develop players. I have a lot of understanding of what this organization has been in the consistency level, but that has hurt them, in my opinion, because no one's challenged them other than the Giants a couple years ago. They haven't really been challenged. Last year, they breezed through September. I think playing important games in September are something that just motivates you. Okay, we're getting that taste. We're getting close. The reason why I mentioned that is now the Padres are feeling like, hey, we have to get through the regular season, and then we got to try to get ready for that playoff run because of the extra playoff teams. I don't think that's a good mindset. I say that because when they got Bob Melvin last year, I understood there's a leader here that is going to lead these men, and he's going to be able to communicate because he's been through everything as a player, as a coach, as a bench coach with the World Series in 2001 with the Diamondbacks. Now he has the ability in the roster and the owner to back him and say, you know what, I'm going to create this mold in this team and make them understand we have to give a lot of people credit. We have to understand we haven't done anything, even though we beat the Dodgers in the playoff once. They got dominated in the regular season last year. So there's still a want to go out there, win a division, and do it the right way. Not a surprise where you're beating the Mets, you have an opportunity against the Dodgers, and now you find yourself in the National Championship Series. That's all said and good. I think Bob Melvin understands there's another layer to this. And that's a reason why I think the Padres are in a perfect spot, even if they are getting hunted, to your point.
Well, and let's kind of transition that from there, because obviously we're going to be watching that and it's going to be kicking off soon. But one of the things that I've really noticed that when I was around, when I was in Woodhill and when I was in Minneapolis, is how much baseball players loved to play golf to get rid of pressure that we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So like when I was out there, Paul Molitor used to play a lot of golf there, and he'd bring pitchers out, and Mulder and these guys who just loved to play would come out anytime Atlanta would come to town and on an inner series and something, he'd get these guys out there. And what I really noticed about baseball players transitioning is the days that they're, you know, because it's 185 days to play 162 games. Right. But what I noticed is when they got time away, their compartmentalization to enjoy what it is they're doing, to just that little brief respite away from the game they love, you would know better than any. There's a great group at Rancho Santa Fe. There's a lot of guys that play baseball that love the sport of golf. And it's not necessarily, you guys are all competitive, mad competitive, but it's more about getting away from what it is everyday grind sometimes. And I remember, like, there's like, I'll always remember Loretta, but it's like some guys are so naturally gifted that when they find the ability to kind of understand that you don't have to necessarily work, sweat, breed, and do all of these things in the game, you kind of come to let it come to you, that it really does happen. Speak a little bit to that competitive mindset of when you get away from baseball playing golf and you start to get this stuff, and how that grows into what it is, kind of that relaxation or that time away from the game.
Yeah, I look back and I think of the creation of how you gain more chemistry. And when I look back at golf on my playing days, it was a different thing. It was kind of getting away, but also getting to know everyone. Because I don't think people realize when you're in that locker room, you understand people, how they're competitive. I looked over at Ken Caminiti in 1998, or a Kevin Brown, or a Trevor Hoffman, and those were three different personalities, even though they were the extremists. They were so good at what they did. But they had opportunity when we had an off day, whether it was on the road, and we had our manager that, who was Bruce Bochy at the time, that loved golf himself. So you have to have a buy-in by your manager. First off, that's a huge thing. If your manager sells off, says, hey, we have an off day, bring your clubs with us, that's great. I've had managers that said, you know what, I don't want you playing golf. So you have to find different ways. And that was really surprising to me, because when it is your off day and these guys are challenged every single day to perform or to compete, you're going out there and you're putting $20 on a hole and saying, hey, let's compete that way. And it's fun. It's enjoyable. You get to let loose. There's variations of guys that play golf, and there's 10 handicaps. There's a one handicap, like you said, with Loretta. That stuff is fun. To me, it was the foursomes. It was the team camaraderie that was elevated to make yourself into an actual team. Because you would go to the next day, you'd talk about it during stretch, and then you'd compete. And you try to go out there and win every single night. There's an intensity that you need to get a release from. And golf really has a lot of release, especially when you go to these beautiful courses, when you get to play, when you're in the big leagues.
Mark, let's talk about your introduction to the game and this whole developmental process of becoming this world-class athlete and champion. Who was instrumental in your introduction to golf?
Yeah, Chris, I mean, I could say my mom and dad introduced me to everything, but golf really was a late bloomer for me. I was the youngest of four boys. I was left-handed. My brothers didn't really get into golf, but I loved it. And I was trying to find a way of, I had a left-handed driver and I had right-handed irons, and I had to try to find a way. And I'm sitting there in Massachusetts growing up going, what is this sport? What am I trying to get into? And it was really enjoyable at time. I drove it left-handed and I hit right-handed and I had to figure it out. No. Then you get into baseball and everyone says, it's going to mess up your swing. I didn't have that mindset. I didn't, because I was driving left-handed, hit right-handed, and I was putting lefty. So you're talking about a mess being a golfer. I had to figure it out that way. I actually stayed right-handed. I found a way to just get a right-handed driver, and I was all right-handed except putting, and I still putt lefty to this day. So I'm messed up. It's a built-in excuse for me, but the passion for golf really evolved as I got deeper and deeper into baseball, because you had an opportunity to be with some of your guys. I wanted that opportunity. I didn't want to be alone. I wanted to hang out with my guys.
Did you ever have that opportunity to maybe switch gears and think, maybe golf is the avenue I want to pursue? Or was it just straight baseball the whole way?
It was straight baseball. Well, I was a football player first, then baseball. So I had to try to find that release. And as we talked about with D-Lane, that's some of the things that you have to look past your competitiveness. And to me, I thought golf was a way of, we always talk about that ultimate foursome, right? I mean, the guys that you want to be with. It was also a way for me to encourage my dad to do it, because I wanted that separation too, to be able to go out and play around with your dad. So that was really the motivation for me. It was always evolving. I never had a game of golf to say, you know what, I think I could play the sport. I wasn't that good, but I still wanted to be really good, because you have that competitive nature inside you.
Where did you play when you were growing up in Boston?
I played all over, but we played the local golf course. It was called Pinecrest. And, you know, it was one of those things where we're going out, we're walking, you're throwing the bag over your shoulder. I absolutely love the purity of what golf brought. That was the key for me. That was the hook. But also you're hanging out with your boys and you're like, I wonder if I can make this 18 by the time it gets dark. And we didn't have many times that we played a lot, because we were just engaged into all of our other sports, but I wanted to make time for that. That time where you just can go out and just change what everything is going on. Cause I think if you're getting into that team aspect, that was another element that I loved, because individually you have to figure it out. And it really started to mesh with the baseball side of what I really started loving, where you feel like you're out in the island by yourself and no one's fixing your swing other than yourself. It's just like in a batter's box. To me, it really correlates. And I think that was kind of stirred my interest a little bit more with golf.
Well, and the other part is, because you got three of us, right? We're all snow people. And, you know, obviously football was a huge love. And so you decided to go to Maine, where, you know, I grew up in Minnesota thinking, well, playing golf at the University of Minnesota or staying in northern climate, there's simulators, there's hitters, or there's hitting bays. There's things, even at that point, it was still pretty prehistoric to what you have now. But like getting out of the snow wasn't something that I never thought about until I moved to San Diego. I'm like, well, I'm the dumbest person in the world that I didn't do this earlier. But you going north to go to school from where you grew up, obviously football was a big part of that. Think about what you were doing as far as from that sport to playing baseball and doing all these things in the cold. And then now suddenly you're down here. Now you see one, like I said, you mentioned Trevor Hoffman and that intensity and what you're talking about. All of these guys that eventually come back to these warm climates, they can't give up the competitive nature. I've been around you guys long enough to know that you've got to compete in something. It doesn't matter if you've got to walk faster to the first tee. It doesn't matter if you got a faster cart. Like if you play golf with Sween early in the morning at La Costa, it's like how you just don't know what people can actually do until you watch them do it. Right. But when you think about going back to those days with you were talking about growing up on munis and playing golf and then going after your sporting career, the one thing I've noticed about your guys' fraternity, and I kind of want to get a little bit into broadcasting, is even you guys are at the booth, right? Even you guys are at the actual desk, you can still see the look and you can see the ribbing and you can see this. And I think like, again, you know better than any, I don't think anybody does it better when KB's got Poppy and he's got A-Rod and he's got Frank there. And you've got three unbelievable personalities that were all amazingly good at the game. Some of the best ever play, but they're so different in the way they talk until it's about winning. And then there's this whole intensity. And when you and Eric and Train and you guys do it and whoever's at the booth, you guys can see yourselves just that competitive, your shoulders go back, your chin goes up, and you know what it takes to win. Do you feel that golf enabled that to continue long term? Like, do you think that's one of the things that keeps that competitive nature in your broadcasting and other things you do sharp with that competitive thought process?
Yeah, I do. I think every time you have an opportunity to compete, you're not going to replace anything that you've done at a professional level. But yes, you're finding ways to be able to do that. Your point of Kevin Burkhart being able to corral all those personalities, but also know there's one common denominator. And when you have that common denominator about a championship or a feeling or watching those elite guys that are on the desk with Kevin Burkhardt, it was their pressure to harness all of us on their backs. To me, it's finding your niche and also breaking it down where I think a lot of people understand not everyone is a superstar. So it really goes back to the whole golf thing. When you're in a group and there's low handicappers and you're sitting at a 10 and you're the low handicapper, you're sitting there going, well, how am I going to win? How am I going to get these strokes? So there's ways to be able to correlate golf into that aspect of there's nerves, but there's also a competitive nature of saying, you know what, if I'm getting a stroke on this hole, I know that I have to just manage my game. I have to manage everything that's happened. It really becomes that competitive nature that you have and how am I going to beat somebody? But man, all of these aspects of sports really bring, when you step back and you realize it and you get older, I think you step back and realize, man, there's so much in sports that creates that competitive nature that just locks you in, to your point. If you have that nature that you've done it in another sport, you have to find ways to be able to incorporate it in that. And I think that's what golf really becomes when you get into that competitive nature.
The game inside the game, as they
right.
say, right? You're always, it's that infinite pursuit of perfection and trying to be the best that you can and show off, I guess, in some capacity. So very cool. Mark, does the family play? Do you get the kids involved? Does the wife play golf?
Yeah, my wife doesn't have the patience to do it because she's a go-getter. I mean, she just wants to go. My daughters are surprisingly really good, but they've never had an opportunity to be able to go out there and consistently play. The youngest one, I got her out there, especially during the pandemic. And when the pandemic hit, my son was looking around going, Dad, I can only play wiffle ball in the front yard for so long. I needed something else. And golf was really, it was a perfect time to create that love for him, because he knew I went all the time. He knew I was going out, and I was trying to create that where I could play with him. He could also play with his grandfather. That's how I tried to sink the hook with him. And the pandemic actually helped that. He ended up playing junior PGA, absolutely loved it because his best friend did it. It was two man teams. And man, when he ended up having his first birdie, and as everyone understands, when you have that, it's a par three and he hits a driver and he's on there and he's got a 20 footer and he sinks it. He looks at me. I'll never forget that moment that when he had that, and that was the sink. That was the hook into him. Absolutely loved it. And when the pandemic stopped and everyone started playing different sports, it opened that up and he stopped and he goes, Dad, I want to take a break right now. And I said, buddy, you can take a break. You can do whatever you want. But remember that round of golf that you had with your grandfather, that's what it's all about. And he really understands that. He's more than competitive to go out and do it. It's a matter of now he understands what it takes to go out there, play with different clubs and play. But he enjoyed it. And he was with his best friend, which really helped.
Yeah, those moments are super special. And I think that's, yeah, like you said, that's the buy-in moment, right? The aha moment where you're like,
oh, yeah,
this is going to be a problem long-term. It's going to start costing a lot of money down the road.
Right. So cool. But I'll pay that money for that happiness. I'm fine with that. Because right? You know what? Every single day, as we all know, every single day in golf is completely different. And I want him to learn that aspect as well.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Way to go. I gotta ask, what is it? I guess the transition from the professional athlete to the broadcasting side. Let's talk a little bit about transitioning into the camera space from the field and that pressure and that sort of evolution as a broadcaster.
Yeah, it's a different pressure. I'll tell you, first and foremost, the hardest part of my day is applying makeup. I'm a bald guy and I have a lot of coverage. And up in Fox Sports, we end up having some makeup artists being able to do it. And I apologize every single day because I have to have a lot on. Frank Thomas also, Dontrell Willis, we're all in the same boat. Bald guys that has nothing but shine on your head when you're in studio. That's a problem when it comes down to that. But man, I'm privileged. I'm working on my 12th year this year in broadcasting. I got to be honest, Chris, I didn't know if I was going to like it. I didn't know what I was going to do after when I finished playing in 08. I was wondering what's next. And I sat in a front office and with the Dodgers after I was finished in 08. And Ned Colletti, the GM at the time, asked me to be a special assistant to the GM. And I was blessed to be able to stay in the game of baseball that I loved. And it transitioned where Fox Sports came in to San Diego and they wanted to cover the Padres. So they had a 20-year contract. I was asked to be a broadcaster, and I thought I was going to have an audition. The next day, they offered me 130 games for pre- and post-game show. Fast forward, I took the job. I had to tell Ned Colletti I was leaving the Dodgers, and I had to try to take this chance because it was in San Diego. And all of a sudden, my second year, I think it was the second year, our general manager said to me, he goes, "Hey, I need you to put your big boy pants on, and I need you to get in the booth and do a game." Well, the scary part was my first major league game in the booth doing a game was with Dick Enberg, the late, great Dick Enberg. And I was shocked that I had to work with a legend, but I also was doing my first game. And I was wondering, what does that feel like for him? I mean, come on.
Over
that's probably like,
Jesus,
this is like a joke. And I didn't want to mess up. But man, I tell you what, I learned so many aspects of him. I also learned to love the aspect of being a broadcaster. So much of my baseball life and my sports life has been the people I've been around and my teammates that I've had. So it's a conduit for me to be able to go out there and describe the great game I love, but also what I was taught by so many great people, whether it was coaches, former players, my dad. Everything comes into your mind and you spit it out and you go out there and try not only to teach the game, but also honor the game of baseball. It's been that for me. It's been great because I've been around, as D Lane knows, being around a Kevin Burkhart, Eric Karros, all of these guys that I didn't get to, Dontrell Willis, I didn't get to be teammates with, but now I am in the broadcasting world. And these people are special, and they make my life that much better to be able to be a part of that. It's really special.
And hopefully you're getting in their wallets on the golf
course. Right. A bit. I try to get Dontrell. He likes to pick up after.
Yes, he does.
He's got a lot of gimmies. He swipes that putter way too much.
And Parksy, Sween will tell you more, but getting into EK's wallet is akin to getting into Fort Knox. It is about the same task.
Right. That is so true.
Because he'll just keep doubling it, and then he'll putt you off. He'll find a way, and EK's just got this amazing way of just getting to where at least it's zero. He doesn't lose, right? And it's annoying as hell because he'll hit this amazing shot, then he'll hit this awful shot, and then he'll get pissed at himself, and he knows he's got to do something, and then he does it, and then he just kind of walks away. And it's like he's beyond frustrated.
He is frustrating, and there's plenty of guys like that. And I tell you what, when we started playing, Kevin Burkhart was like, "Man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it in the sport." Kevin Burkhart, the next time I played, the year after, he goes, "Yeah, I've taken some lessons, and I'm feeling good. I got some new equipment." And I'm looking at him, I go, "Buddy, like, this is you're hooked." And when you see someone like that, and Kevin Burkhart, and you get to play with all those guys, and EK, again, we're talking about that foursome that you absolutely love playing, and it's a special day when you get to do that.
How's the competitive nature on the golf course with you guys? Is there a lot of ribbon going on? Is there a lot of shit talk, or is it pretty just down to business trying to get this done?
I like to rib people. I mean, I if I leave and my cheeks are hurting from smiling every day, that's a good round of golf. I mean, I'm not out there to shoot under par. But I am out there to rag on people. I'm out there to have fun. I've always been that way, whether it's baseball, whether it's football, or especially on the golf course. You want to be able to have a good time. And that's when you have a group like that, if you're not giving it, you better take it. And that's the way it always is.
Derek, no, you know all about that. You played a lot of golf with Dontrell, so I can imagine you've
Well, it's funny, Chris, because they're very similar to their studio personalities. So, like, KB's always the mediator, always, right?
Right, he is.
Train never shuts up, ever. And when he plays, if it's not his hole, he just takes it off. He'll go throw a couple other balls down. He'll just pick up. He won't give you score. And then at the end, he forgets that he did that. And it's like, well, I don't. Okay. All right. Cool. Whatever. Like, that's the way it goes, right? EK plays golf just like he played baseball. I'm sorry. He's a natural, but golf doesn't come natural to him. So he works in his own way. I can't explain it. There's really no way to talk about it, you know? And then, like you said, Sween is right-handed in golf and left-handed in everything else. So yeah, he's got his own method, but he does it quickly and he does it efficiently. And then he makes sure that when he wins, you know that he won. And that's the smile you get, right? So it is kind of funny where personas are like that. And it's very different too. It's like Eric would never practice, but Train would hit 300 to 400 golf balls a day if you let him.
Yeah.
And he just has to go through the process. So much like when he pitched, like even when I saw Mulder and you see Smoltz and these guys play golf, they're so far more technical and they love to pit range balls. And then when I was at Rancho Santa Fe, none of the baseball players ever warmed up on the range. They were going out to know what they were. They weren't going out to post a score. They were going out to play, be fraternal and have this great time. But it is very different that most baseball players in my life are not range grinders. They're not people who go find in the dirt.
Right.
Grudzielanek was, Train is. There are certain guys that go like to be in the dirt, but most of the guys, it's not about that. And Dontrell's the difference. I mean, Dontrell goes through 4 different shirts at a range practice. Never stops sweating.
3 drivers.
Right. And then it's like, hey, D, we're rolling hills. You gotta tuck that in. Oh yeah, I'll get right to that. He never does. And it's like, you know, so it's never this thing, right? But you get where these people, and it's kind of that thing where you tee off, and I'll never forget it. We said it a couple times ago on the pod when the first time I played with Nomar, and Nomar was nervous. Like Nomar was nervous, right? So like the whole pitch clock thing that we're going through in the Major League Baseball is because of Nomar Garcia, right? So like that's the way I look at this. But like it's like to think that these guys have accomplished what they want, but when they're not fully sure, it's a different world. And I think that's why I love athletes playing golf, right? Whether it's hockey, it's a much easier transition for the hockey players. They seem to understand the lever system and the fairway woods. Like nobody hits a 3-wood like a hockey player. Nobody. Their 3-woods just never come down. They're just always nuclear. And you get these people that play, and I love watching athletes process. And like some people, they're never going to be as good as they did professionally, right? So you take a Nomar, one of the all-time greats. He's never going to play golf. And then you take his wife, Mia, who is literally just shot 74. And she's going to break par because her dedication and determination will not let her not win. And Nomar's kind of moved past that. He's still got Dodger stuff and he's still doing a lot of things, but it is funny to watch the high world-class athletes take on the game that you and I know so well, Parksy, because everybody does it a little differently. And I think that there's this thing, and I was going to ask you a little bit too, Sween, if you can open about it. Tell us about that group that you travel with. I think that the world should know that is a really special group of guys. And it was kind of golf is one of these things. You guys take a winter trip, but can you elaborate a little bit as we're kind of talking about other athletes about that group that you're so fond of?
Yeah, it's so fun. We do a ski trip every year, and a good friend of ours has created this, and we're called the Outlaws. It's a hard trip to describe because there's so many great people. It's a lot of baseball players, but it's not all baseball players. And that's the beauty of it, because we're not talking just baseball. We're talking about life. It's an aspect that we go on, and there's guys that ski, there's guys that go on snowmobile trips, there's guys that go fishing, so many aspects of it. And then we end up going to dinner. We come back to the rec hall on the place that we stay at, and we're listening to music, playing poker, talking stories, and connecting. And the beauty of the game of baseball and the beauty of what connects us is golf, baseball, and life itself. And we're not solving problems. We're just getting better as people. You mentioned Kurt McCaskill, one of our mainstays on this trip. And a lot of people out there might not understand Kurt McCaskill, but on this trip, the conversations I have with him go along with the biggest hug when you leave. And that's the beauty of this trip. 60 plus guys made it this year. And it's, like I said, guys, I could talk about it nonstop. But this year, we had seven major league managers on the trip. And it is fascinating. Not only is it breaking down some funny baseball stories, but man, it's a guy's trip that is just describing the talks and the ability to gain knowledge is incredible. But it's the Mike Sweeney's of the world. It's the guys that give you a huge smile. It's the Mark Loretta's, Dave Roberts. Over and over, all it is, guys, when it comes down to it, is a fraternity that you're hugging guys and you're understanding that we're having dinner tomorrow night and can't wait to have the conversations that we have. And then we are celebrating what is an amazing trip. And Outlaws really describes exactly what we are, a conduit to what life really should be. And we're fortunate to be able to do that and continue to do it every single year because a guy named Glenn Doshea, who is unbelievable with his opportunity to get everyone together, it's a special group and a special trip. I don't ski, but man, do I go up there? I'm fine. It's an amazing trip.
You're the hill bunny? Are you serving cocktails and hors d'oeuvres?
I'm serving cocktails. I'm cleaning up. I'm making breakfast. It is all inclusive because the first year I got asked up there to Jackson Hole. First year I got up, I was like, man, this is a once in a lifetime trip. Then I got invited again the following year. And I'm looking around over my shoulder saying, how did I get on this list? How appreciative I am to be able to be on that list. But man, the people that are there, they better yourself as a person because of who they are and how humble all of them are, no matter what stature they have in life.
And Parksy, just so you know, before you go forward, is Kirk actually gave up a baseball scholarship at ASU to play baseball and hockey
in
Vermont and was one of the three or four best players in college hockey. So
100%
just shows you the diversity of the group of these guys like that. That's the part I love is the multi-sport stuff, the way we grew up. So it's just an amazing group of guys. I've been lucky enough to see most of them and watch them interact with each other. And it's a pretty special thing.
Yeah. And I'll tell you another side story, guys, right when we got home, there's a majority of the guys that are in San Diego and we met up for a golf day and Kurt McCaskill set it up. It was a golf day. We dressed up and had a dinner at the club, Rancho Santa Fe Country Club, as you mentioned, Derek. I mean, one of the most beautiful places around. But it was another special day. It was kind of an add-on, and everyone's talking about it. It's like, hey, let's do it again next year. And it's going to grow. And that comfort level of understanding we're going on a trip, but also we're coming together again, and it's through golf. Again, a competitive nature. Groups, we're trying to win here, we're putting money in and you're trying to win and bragging rights, but man, it's all about just connecting with people, and that trip really resonates with golf as well.
Yeah, golf's always going to be there for you, and that's the ultimate proposition of golf, you know what I mean? It's, mm-hmm. you only get out of it what you put into it, and it's always going to be there at some fast.
Right.
I love the philosophy, Mark. You're such a people first guy. That's obviously a testament to what Derek says about you. You're one of the good ones. We know Mark, the broadcaster. We know Mark, the Major League Baseball player. We know Mark, the family guy. We know Mark, the cocktail server now.
Right.
What's the sneaky sort of habit or sneaky obsession that you have that nobody really knows? Maybe share that with us.
I make a mean margarita. Like my margarita game is like it's stepped up, and it goes along with the drinking part of it. I'm not a heavy drinker, but during the pandemic, I learned how to make a really good margarita. So I used to be I'm a tequila guy. I enjoy tequila, but I never thought really good tequila needed to go in your margarita. I was one of those guys that just was ignorant about that. And Xavier Nady, one of the good friends of mine that played Major League Baseball for years, stepped up my game. And he gave me the knowledge to be able to say, hey, during the pandemic, if you want to be a good margarita guy, you're going to have to do this. I followed his orders, and I feel like I can't mess it up.
This could be the transition after Fox Major League Baseball. Right. Cocktails with Sweens or something like that.
I would love that. Sounds like another pod we can end up creating.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a sponsor of the show, so we'll get you set up with some RTD tequila in a can. Yes. Pretty
perfect
stuff from Hecho. I don't know if you've heard.
I love it.
Yeah, it's blue agave. It's pretty high end tequila, and it's a phenomenal beverage overall.
I'm looking forward to that. That's nice.
Excellent.
All right. Well,
final thoughts.
Yeah. So I guess the one thing I'm kind of looking for is when you think about coming up this year, and obviously it's going to be a long year. You're going to start going up, and we have a special guest jumping in, and so I just wanted to make sure that when we start talking about this, I wanted to get both of you on. Hey, Train, are you there?
My man, D Train.
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, man?
Clean dog. What up, baby? My ball. I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm waiting on to hear some of your new
talking about cocktails with Sweeney.
That you are legendary. Yeah, Sweeney Dog is the cocktail extraordinaire, bro. You know what I mean? He single-handedly got us through COVID. So I'm very proud to learn his pitch mix, I like to call
one,
it.
One-two wiggle, it's called. It's one-two wiggle, D-Trade.
Yeah, no doubt.
Are you doing okay, bud? You all right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything's good, bro. Everything's good. Kids are good, man. I'm very proud of them. As sweet as of his, and you know, it's a revolving door. It is a revolving door, and just trying to get through each day.
There's a lot of
the keys. So
I tell you what, guys. At D Train, he's got his hands full because his daughters are absolutely beautiful. So he's got a shotgun ready philosophy, is what he's got.
You know the crazy shit about that? That is starting to hit home. And now I'm having and Sweeney, you know how it is because we talked about it. You take that shit in, man, because one, you realize you're getting old. And two, like, you know what I mean? It's like I love fucking with the boys. I just enjoy shaking their hand hard
Train, I noticed that you're posting most of your young daughter's pictures now. As they age, they just get to be on social media a lot less, unless it's soccer dealing. So I think that you're smarter that you're letting on, though.
Nah, they're just embarrassed.
They are smart.
So I know they're smart. So that's the one thing I'm not ashamed of. They're smart. So I'm glad this private – I've got my slider was good for a year and a half so I could pay for this.
I feel like this is an episode of Bad Boys where old uncle and Will Smith answer the door and the young guys for prom. A nightmare.
Absolutely. It's up there. It's up there. It's up there. But no, it's fun, man. You love it.
Dontrell, you know, does everything with a smile. Yes. And if he's not smiling, you better get on the right foot.
Run.
And that's why I love him. For many, many reasons. But, man, he does everything with a smile. I love it.
Say, is there a Train, is there any grass left on the range?
You. I love you, bro.
Did you use it all up?
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, listen, with the record number of frost delays that have happened in Arizona, for the first time, I've been complaining. You know, there's levels of members. There's levels of members. And we all know this. There's levels of members in the golf world. There's members that are there every day, and they have an opinion about everything, rightfully so. And in there's members that just say, hey, man, as long as the frost delay lifts up, I'm having a good time and play my 18 within an hour and a half. I like the fall right in the middle of that because, you know, I like to bitch and complain about the snacks and stuff like that, you know, the crustables and what have you. But it's all good. It's all good. But yeah, so the divot, we put a divot maker sign out and the members are not
we were beating down on you a little bit about being a range rat, but we got to get some dirt on Sweeney here. So give us a little insight into playing golf with this guy, his persona on the golf course, and how much of a competitor he really is.
No, he is the best. I mean, first of all, He's got this group.
Yeah.
They get the first tee time at La Costa, and literally there's still fog rolling over. So I don't even know if we're going to be able to find our ball. The fog just lifts up magically for these guys, and they all have their own cart. So they are flying through the fairway, flying, and it's just like, hey, good ball. Yeah, all right. We're going to let you have that one. A lot of seven-footers are let half. It's awesome. It's fucking, it's awesome. It's literally the best round of golf. So he's one of the people in my phone book that I can never have real dirt on because he is a joy to have. He's funny. He has the best old man laugh I've ever had in my life. I've never heard say that his old man laugh is the best. So I don't have any dirt on Swing Dog.
I'll tell you this, Chris. This was fun. I knew he always takes a trip to San Diego and stays and with his family and all that stuff. And he goes, hey, I'm in town. And so I go out and play. He didn't tell me he was around to play or whatever. So we're right around the 10th hole, and I see this card coming right at us. I'm like, what's this guy need? Hey, what's he need? And he gets closer, and everyone knows D-Train. I mean, he's got the look. And I go, D-Train, what's up? And he goes, they told me you were going to be out here. Well, he probably thought he was going to get probably 14 holes in. We're already on the turn. So all of a sudden, he cranks it out, and he's just getting loose. And we get to the drivable par four, which I think is like the 14th hole, 15th hole. And we get up there, and he's a loose at this point. He's played like three or four holes out with us. And all of a sudden, he launches this driver. And I'm like, Train, that's there. It's there. And he had an eagle putt that was literally, what, Train, 20 feet? 20 feet. He had 20 feet. And 20 he's like, at least. and he walks off. I go, buddy, you got space in our foursome anytime and being able to do that. He was playing speed up golf. I love it. Guys, the guys I play with, they literally can play around in 2 hours. And it's our own cart. Love it's it. 2 hours. It's just messed up my game for the rest of my life because I have to play fast golf now. And D-Train knows that. When I have to slow it down, who knows what I'm bringing?
It's ugly. Are you a range guy, Mark, though?
No. I roll a couple putts. I do a couple trunk twists and let it rip.
Yeah, Parksy, it's the complete opposite. Sween will just, that's exactly what he goes to the putting green and does this. Train literally moves in to the range.
Yeah,
he sets his bag up, and then there's a camera, and he's got to make sure that everybody in the range at least knows he's there. He's got to say hi to about 87 people. He's got to go check in. Then when he's done, he always forgets something, so he has to go back to the cart, and he's got to come back again.
He's got to get his track man. He's got to get his track
man. So we just get this point. We always tell Train that we're playing 15 minutes earlier than what we really are, just to get in there and get him through the process. Because by the time he's already won mayor of the range, he's going to be a member at whatever club he's walking down the range at. He's literally going to go play. And then by the time he gets to the first tee, he's literally got to change a shirt because he sweat through the shirt that he had on the range. And it's like, it could not be more obvious.
The grind is real, man. The grind is real. I know we played Palos Verdes and graciously they hosted us out there, but I swear to God, Train was probably there a week in advance reading the greens.
He
was dialed in. That day.
Well, Chris, you understand why obviously I'm a blessed man. I mean, two of the greatest people in my life are on this podcast. I dig them dearly. They know what they mean to me. And Train, I so appreciate you coming on, because when Sween, I hope we have a video of it, because when Sween saw it pop up, that it went.
I love it.
Eater, and it was just so good. So
my cheeks are hurting, Trey. And I always am like, you know, I'm smiling, man.
I'm so blessed that both of you guys came on. Thank you very much, Mark. You killed it as always. You're such a professional. And I was hoping that Train was going to jump on. I know he had some things tonight, so I know he's still in Arizona, coming to LA here in a little bit. But both of you guys, thank you very much for being part of the Four Jack. We're really lucky to have you. And I promise that, you know what, I'll bring all of the ingredients. We'll make them, and then we'll go play Rolling Hills, and we'll have a nice dinner. We'll do everything right.
I'm looking forward to it, buddy. And Chris, D, thank you for having us. And D-Train, anytime that you're on something that we're doing, buddy, you know we're going to be laughing. And I love it. Thanks for having me on.
Hey. Nah, thank you. Love you guys all like family, like blood, man. I appreciate you having me on. And Sween, I will be in San Diego in a couple weeks. So LaCosta,
get your 2-hour round ready.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Appreciate
always a pleasure.
It.
All the best this year, Mark. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Appreciate
buddy.
That, Chris. Thank you.